Sometimes you feel so alone and overwhelmed, you don't know where to turn. These days, it seems like there is no end to our problems. We invite you to connect with Silent Unity, the 24-hour prayer ministry, where someone is waiting to pray with you right now. Since 1890, Silent Unity has always been there. No judgment or dogma, just someone affirming the best for you. Call 816-969-2000 today. You can also connect online at unityprayervigil.org.
You're listening to Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world. Welcome to World Spirituality, exploring the unity within all cultures and faith traditions with Paul John Roach, minister of Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. Discover the universal principles present in all the world's religions and take an incredible journey to new understanding. Now, here is your host, Paul John Roach.
So, hello and welcome to World Spirituality on the Unity Online Radio Network. I'm your host, Paul John Roach, coming to you from Unity Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. Joining me today are the authors of a new book entitled Soul Whispering, The Art of Awakening Shamanic Consciousness. And the authors are Linda Starr Wolf and Anita Gage. Starr Wolf is the founding director and president of Venus Rising Association for Transformation, Venus Rising University, and the Shamanic Ministers Global Network. She's also the author of 9 books, including Shamanic Breathwork, Shamanic Mysteries of Egypt, and Visionary Shamanism. And Nita Gage has a doctorate in Shamanic Psycho-Spiritual Psychology and a master's degree in clinical psychology. She's the co-founder of the Neuro-Imaginal Institute and director of Healer Within Retreats around the world. So it's a pleasure to introduce and welcome both Starr Wolf and Nita to the show today. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Paul.
Thank you, Paul. It's a pleasure to be on.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Glad you are. Everybody's whispering these days, right? We're whispering to our souffles as well as our dogs and our horses. So what does it mean, actually, to be a soul whisperer? I think I know, but I'm just playing the devil's advocate here so you can tell our audience what this is about.
Go
you
ahead,
ready?
Star, you start.
Okay. All right. So this is Starr Wolf speaking, but I know when I'm speaking because Nita and I travel on such a same path. That's why we were able to write this book together, that we're both in agreement about what this means. But for us, the soul whispering is really about listening to our inner self. It's pretty simple, but it's been made into such a complex thing because there are so many outer authority figures in our life, of course, starting with our childhood and our parents, but all the way through the teachers and, of course, medical doctors and advisors and even counselors. And both Nita and I have been psychotherapists and have been in a position of counseling others collectively together. This is telling of our ages a little bit for, close to 80 years, if not longer, if I really count it carefully. And so what does it mean to really, advise others to listen to themselves when you're the one telling them to do that? And this has really been a personal journey for both of us, learning to listen to our own self and coming out of that approach that doctor knows best or daddy knows best or even mommy knows best or the therapist knows best. There was a song in the 70s or the 80s by Sting that said, "Let your soul be your pilot." And he was really saying the same thing. When the doctors fail to heal you, when there's nowhere else left to go, let your soul guide you home. And I think it's interesting that the last place that we sometimes look, which is the most obvious at some level, is within. And just the other piece I would want to say about that, I got a cut on my finger the other day traveling in the airport, and I didn't have to tell it to heal. I just put a little, Neosporin on it and a Band-Aid. And then the rest of it, it did on its own. And so there's something that we've lost in our culture that is this, what we believe is shamanic consciousness, is that we are elemental beings and that there's some deep part of us, these wisdom keepers, even if you would even want to call it the shaman within or the healer within, that for the most part knows how to bring forth this inner healing and transformation just as nature does. And Nita often says, well, being in the having worked in the medical world, you know, the medical world is really good if you've got a broken bone, if you need surgery, those kinds of things. But so much of what we look to others, including the medical field, given the number of psychiatric medications that are prescribed.
Absolutely.
And all kinds of medications, is for someone to fix us. And we're not really broken. We're just in transformation.
Yes, lovely. Well, it's about trusting, isn't it? Trusting that inner wisdom, that soul within oneself, instead of, like you say, the voices that were initially outside of ourselves. Unfortunately, they've been internalized, right? And we carry this sense of judgment around based on what we've learned over the years. And it's our worst taskmaster. And you talk about, you know, the difference between the sort of the ego-based, the personality-based being that we sometimes take ourselves to be, and the soul being, and we could do all kinds of trips on ourselves. You've got a lovely part in the book where you talk about, you know, the perfectionism. You know, I'm gonna hide my woundedness by being perfect, the perfect beauty queen or the successful person, or I'm gonna act out, you know, become dysfunctional, and it never works out for me. But both of these are ways that we avoid connecting with the beautiful truth of ourselves, right? This soul, this holistic soul within us.
Yes, Paul, you're absolutely right. It's that returning to ourself. And you said an interesting thing, too, is that, yeah, those voices of the authorities are outside of ourselves. So sometimes what we need is to find people who are adept at listening to their own soul. And that's what Starwolf and I have developed and many, many people have. And so the other part of what the book's about is that, yeah, we do need others sometimes, but we need others to be with us and to encourage us and to model how you can listen to your own wisdom and follow it rather than giving people an agenda or prescription of what to do.
Right.
That is very powerful. But you do, you know, it is lovely to be held and be supported and even helped in your healing by someone who's not thinking they're the authority, but may have a lot of mastery. So it's another part of it.
Well, I like that distinction, you know, between authority and mastery, because, yes, that some people are, you know, helpful guides to openness and deepness, but they don't have to be authority figures. I mean, we went through that, didn't we? I mean, you children of the 60s and 70s went through that with some of the crazy gurus out there, you know, and people turned their whole being off, and you know, and we became almost zombie-like in following these gurus, and we talk about surrender, but surrender is not necessarily to an outside force; it's to the beautiful harmony within, and sometimes we mistake that for the teacher, the authority without. I do want to say though, that, you know, in my 30 years of ministry. And dealing with doctors and hospitals and therapy people and whatever of one kind or another, therapeutic settings, that there has been a shift, hasn't there? I mean, I remember back in 30 years ago, you know, even if you talked about you were taking a vitamin or something, the doctor would laugh at you, you know. Now they've included it in part of their protocol, and there is an awareness of a spiritual dimension. I mean, it's still not complete. I think we still have, you know, allopathic medicine that doesn't want to look at anything else other than its scientific basis. But I think there is a larger awareness. Now they're even chanting mantras in hospitals, you know, and things like that, which was quite a shift, really.
It is. I'm really glad you're bringing that up. I actually spent years working with physicians and was the executive director for the Integrative Holistic Medical Board for a long time, and there are there's a powerful movement, particularly in America, but around the world, of physicians who completely understand that healing is an inside job. And they're doing a tremendous job. And it's also the shift is happening in psychotherapy and in psychoanalysis. And I think that one of the things that I find with the physicians that come and do work with me and with Starwolf as well is they are all seeking indigenous answers because they know that what's happening, what they can provide, can only go so far.
Yes.
And so we know psychiatrists who are literally writing prescriptions to go do shamanic work. To
get back in touch
with their own nature. Yeah.
We also know some physicians who are coming to us who are also coming to do the work for themselves, which is in some ways to me even more impressive because we've in the past had kind of this little shadowy joke that sometimes MDs think they're M-deities.
Yes. Unfortunately.
And unfortunately, people, you know, who have given over their power actually want to see sometimes, a doctor or someone else as an M-deity. So that's something that we're very careful with in our approach to working with people. I primarily work with people in workshops and, you know, after having many, many people in private practice over the years, I primarily do workshops and trainings now. And that's one of the first things that we teach right from the beginning is that this healer, this soul whisperer is within, and that, you know, I'm still daily. It's a spiritual practice for me. You know, it's not something I accomplish, ta-da. You know, that it is a spiritual practice each day to listen and to see
Absolutely.
What my soul is guiding me to do.
Well, and part of it is balance, isn't it? And as in everything, you know, balance between inner and outer, as above, so below, as you quote in your book.
Yeah.
And it's also the same with the M deities. I think that, you know, this the sense that there's a power to that. You know, if you believe that doctor has the power to heal you and you're willing to cooperate with that, it can work. It's like the placebo effect, I guess,
mm-hmm.
you know, whether there's power within it or not, if you trust it, then it can have power. It inspires your own healing process. But the downside is, you know, that when you give up all your power and authority, your own integrity, if you like, and then, you know, you can get into places where the doctor can do things that might not be to your best interest. So, you know, there's a balance there. So, tough one because, yes, we give a lot of power to the medical profession in our society, you know, just as we give a lot of power to lawyers and politicians as well, unfortunately. So, you know, a shaman is a walker between the worlds, between both worlds, right? You know, you're, like Jesus said, I'm in the world, but I'm not of it.
Mm-hmm.
able to, you know, be in that balance again. It's not like you're checking out into some other realm, but you're using the larger realm, to inform the everyday world that we live in, or the woundedness of us, you know, whether it be physical or psychological. And I love that idea, you know, the walking between the two worlds, being able to see a little more clearly, right?
Yeah.
Yes, Paul, years ago we talked about walking between the worlds and the two worlds, but as our understanding has grown with shamanism and embodied shamanism, it's really multidimensional and it's walking between all the worlds. And sometimes when people were addressing audiences, you know, sometimes people are more scientifically oriented or some people are more, you know, spiritually oriented. And of course, those are really just on a spectrum in my mind and consciousness. But walking between the worlds, we already do, regardless of what we believe. For instance, we have just, I think everyone would agree that we have a physical body, that we have emotions and feelings, so that's a body itself. It's different from the physical body. And we have a mind, so we have an intellect that thinks, so that's another type of body. So even if a person didn't acknowledge spirituality, they could acknowledge that they are a physical, mental, emotional being. That already can be walking between different worlds because I could, you know, get up and override the fact that I had a headache and go to work and then still be, in a good mood about it and still use my mind to get things done,
yes.
You know, and walk between the worlds. So it's not a far reach, at least in my mind and heart, and I know Nita's, to say, well, what other dimensions might we explore? What other spiritual or shamanic levels might we explore? And once we start thinking on that level, it really becomes really so magnificent, all the different realms that we can visit.
Absolutely.
And we don't limit ourselves.
I love that. Yeah, lovely idea. And I think it's so true, and it's true with our roles, too. You know, we have roles where we can be very serious, and we need to be. You know, we're very professional. And other roles where we're frivolous and joyous, and they're all parts of us. You know, and sometimes it's appropriate to be serious. Sometimes it's quite appropriate to be frivolous. I had a case in point. You know, this morning I'm getting ready for a 10-week sabbatical from church, and there's a lot to do, both personally and professionally, to deal with that, and some craziness happened. And I got into the shower this morning, just kind of screamed for a while. And my wife looked at me and sort of thought, what's going on? But it felt awesome. You know, it was a cathartic moment. And it released a lot of tension, built up tension. And so I walked into a different world, you know, as I walked into the shower.
Mm.
But you could do things in the shower, perhaps, or do things in the sanctity of your own home that you might not want to do out in public, you know. So we're walking between different worlds in that sense, too, aren't we?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I love that story of screaming in the shower. I mean, the really exciting thing about that
is
it's right there. It's right there on the surface.
Yeah,
we are completely hardwired to use ourselves. And it's something about the way you gave yourself permission that's so important, that you just listen to yourself. That's what I do.
Well, and it's something that happens without thinking about it, too, you know, because if you start thinking about it and think, I think I'll feel better if I scream in the shower. No, you know, that's contrived, right? It has to be just, you know, it just comes out, naturally bubbles out. So I think there's this.
Yeah, no, I really think it's your next book.
Screaming in the shower. Yeah.
Screaming in the shower.
You know, in seriousness, I would add that, yeah, that is definitely true. And Paul, you are an embodied being, obviously. I mean, you're speaking from a place of grounded embodiment about very esoteric concepts, in a sense. And I just kind of want to put a word in that for a lot of people, it may be that they have to start by saying, maybe it'd be a good idea to scream in the shower, or have someone encourage them to do that.
Yeah,
and it's a little bit like learning to drive a car, you might say. Like, you've got to think about the clutch and the steering wheel, and then you put on the gas, I've got to think about it, and then eventually you're just driving. So when you get to the place you are of being embodied, shamanically embodied, we'd say, then, yeah, you would do things like step into the shower. And life is better for that. And it's really nice to know that you can kind of train yourself to do that.
Right. Yeah. Good point. Yeah. You know, baby steps. Right. It's wherever you are at any given time. Everything is good. I mean, I like the idea that we're all students and we're all teachers at the same time. You know, in some ways we're very wise and advanced, aren't we? And in other ways we're still babbling like children. And that's okay. You know, we are all these things. And that's another between the worlds again, I guess you could say. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it says in the Bible, you know, the foolishness of God is wiser than the wisdom of man, and I've always liked that one, you know. So soul loss. Many books talk about that, and what's your take on that? What is soul loss?
Well, for me, Paul, the soul loss happens when I don't listen to myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you've experienced this, where you've just known something, or you had an intuitive hit, and then because of conditioning or perhaps some old tape from the past, maybe childhood, maybe adolescence, maybe from school, or, you know, sometimes from religions, different things, or even science, something happens and you doubt, and then the doubting comes in. And there's been times when I'm like, I knew that. You know, why didn't I act on that? Or I tried to act on it and I was ridiculed, or somebody said, oh, you know, what are you doing? Or that's crazy. And that judgment, or even ignored, there's this place inside where there's a little bit of soul loss. It's often identified with fear or anxiety or shame. and feeling alienated from ourselves. That's how I identify soul loss. We don't even know we have it. We can just feel it, though. There's an emptiness or a low-grade depression. Maybe illnesses start happening a lot where we're not feeling well, chronic headaches, things like that. Anxiety starts creeping up. And one good way to know that we have soul loss is when we start looking for answers. We say, I think I need to, do this, or I think I need to do that. And we start on looking for the answers. But because we're so geared to looking for answers in the outside, that we frequently don't turn within. But, of course, Nita's made a really good point, is that sometimes we're already down that rabbit hole a little ways, and it's not that easy to climb out. And so we need some reflection from someone else. I wanted to say something about your... I have to go back to your screaming in the shower because it just so grabbed me.
I'm in the regret bringing that up.
We're not going to let you let go of this one. And I'm imagining you on the front, with a little parts marked out of you standing naked in the shower saying, screaming in the shower, Reverend Paul, words of wisdom for reconnecting with yourself. But anyway... and have your wife standing over in the corner saying, go, honey, go, or whatever. But it's a soul, it's your cheerleader. But the screaming in the shower, you weren't just screaming in the shower, you were screaming in water. And I just have to say this, because in the shamanic world, what the indigenous cultures have taught us and the indigenous teachers and shamans that we've worked with, and also both of us have Nita was on the reservation when she was small and growing up there, and I was with a very indigenous grandmother as a child and later on as an adult, a Seneca Wolf Clan grandmother. Whenever something would come up, instead of giving me an answer when I was a child or my adopted Seneca Wolf Clan grandmother, she would send me to an element. She would say, walk down, and I'd be on the reservation, walk down to the river, talk to the river. Gather some stones while you're there and bring them back. We're going to build a circle that you're going to sit in all night. Under the moon, on the earth. We're going to build a fire. Go to the fire. So you going to the shower and screaming in the shower, your energy was you actually being guided, I believe, from within to take it to the water.
Right.
And, even if you can't get to a river or a fire or set in the woods.
Yeah. Very interesting. We're at the break. I got to stop us, but we'll come back in a couple of minutes. After these messages from Unity, I'm with Linda Starr Wolf and Nita Gage talking about their new book, Soul Whispering. Join us in a couple of minutes.
Wouldn't you like to share the programs that inspire you most with audiences around the world? That's easier than ever with mobile giving. Just text Unity Radio to 72727 and help us continue offering spiritual programs that change lives.
I will leave this world as it is.
The world is full of voices, advertising, television, politics, colleagues, family, and friends. All are too happy to tell us how to live. In all of that noise, it's easy to miss the one voice that matters, your own soul. What would happen if you could hear that voice? Imagine the clarity, confidence, and courage that would be yours and the life you could create. Join Janet Connor, best-selling author of Writing Down Your Soul, The Lotus and the Lily, and Your Soul Wants Five Things, as she and her guests explore how to hear the call of the soul and create the soul-directed life. Live Thursday at 1 p.m. Central, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Go inside to find my God.
You've been listening to World Spirituality with host Reverend Paul John Roach. To learn more about Reverend Paul John Roach, visit his website, pauljohnroach.com, Or if you have questions, email him at pauljohnroach@yahoo.com. We now return to World Spirituality.
All right, welcome back to the show. And remember, yes, I'm going to be here in the States next week. But then after that, there'll be 10 weeks when I'm taking, with my wife, actually, we're taking World Spirituality on the road. I'll be on sabbatical, and we're going to go all over the place. We're not sure exactly where we're going to be on any given week, but we'll interview some of the wise and crazy and wonderful people that we meet on the road. So join us for that series. It's going to be a 10-week series extending through end of July, August, and September. We were talking about water in the previous segment, and one of the chapters in the book is about the five cycles of change and Star Wolf's alchemical shamanic roadmap, which cycles through the various elements, and which is interesting. And I know that Nita, you're very interested in the air aspect of that, you know, in terms of breath work. And it's interesting, isn't it, how the word for breath and the word for spirit in the Jewish tradition and other traditions is the same word, you know. So when we're breathing in, we're literally breathing in the life-giving energies of spirit, right? So there's the dance between the two worlds again, between the physical and the spiritual, made real by the breath. And of course, you know, in Hinduism, you know, using your breath and in yoga and etc., immensely important in transforming the whole being that we are. So you want to talk a little bit more about that?
The cycles of change, that's really the foundation, I think, of all the shamanic traditions. Every shamanic tradition that we've studied and that we've participated in, I know that I can speak for both of us on this, has included as one of the main teachings a relationship to the elements. And this can seem, pardon the pun, elemental, you know, just simple in some ways. But it is the foundation, and I think sometimes because of its simplicity, it's often ignored or overlooked or oversimplified in a way that it's almost put aside and not thought of as important. Let's think of something more important. But mm-hmm. if we're really honest and we understand, even from a scientific point of view, everything is comprised of, in some elemental form, of the energies of water, earth, fire, and air. And they all have such a powerful components to them, and yet we lose touch with that part of ourself. So you know the in the native tradition they'll say the green nation or the standing people. They're speaking about the trees or the stone people, the grandmothers and grandfathers. They're the ancestors, the bones of which we stand, or the great fire nation, you know, from the sun itself, and from the volcanoes, and from the heat within our own bodies, the metabolism, the whole system that's working there, and the air being the part of us that is connected to the breath, and yet the air itself that exists out around us, unless it came into our bodies, it wouldn't mean that much to us. We are to embrace these energies of water, air, fire, and earth in order to be a whole human being. And beyond the elementals themselves, because that's nature, there is super nature or supernatural. And that's the same thing. Super nature and supernatural are the same thing. There is something which we refer to as the great mystery, the great unknown. And that great mystery is the spirit, if you will, the super nature that animates nature itself. And it's in everything. It is in rocks. You know, they're alive too. They have a vibration of frequency. It's in every living thing. And when that super nature or that spirit leaves the nature, that nature begins to decay or to disintegrate. So the integration of the supernatural or the super nature and the elemental world creates an embodiment of spirit, which allows us to have an embodied experience here on the planet. And rather than it being seen as, sinful to be born, that we're born in sin or that it's an accident that we're here, we see it as a powerful expression of love and embodiment from the great mystery that somehow we are here in this incredible experience, along with our brothers and sisters, not only human beings, but all beings, including the green nations and all of the elements and all of the animals and creatures. So when we learn to walk in more harmony with the elemental world, we're actually embracing our embodied spirituality.
I love it. Well, you know, there's a great line from Leonard Cohen in one of his great songs. I think it's So Long, Marianne. He says, "So, you know, we forgot to pray for the angels, and then the angels forgot to pray for us." And I thought that's exactly what you're saying. You know, if we don't recognize the sacred within things, the super nature within things, the angelic, if you like, that then they no longer are there as part of our support system. You know, they, of course, they're still there because that's their nature, but they're not there for us because we're not aware of them. We're not open to them. And so when we look at nature, we see it as a picturesque backdrop, or we see it as a resource to be mined or whatever, instead of seeing it as this sacred whole. I think this is what, you know, the Native Americans were trying to tell us, right? That you know you can't buy the land, you know, it doesn't make sense. And of course, but we, in our system, you know, everything's about buying and selling land and property and resource, raw materials to be used. And so, yeah, we've you know, the angels, the fairies, the whatever you personify as being that essence, you know, has been banished, if you like, from the woods and the streams, you know, and the poets have been bemoaning this, of course, for hundreds of years now that we've lost that. But we want to bring it back, right? I think many people are yearning for that sense of integration again.
Absolutely. That is the yearning. And I think I mentioned earlier that medical doctors and therapists and lots of people in the helping profession are turning back to nature and to the natural world and turning to shamans to get them back in touch with that. But you've really said it so well that when we turn away from the spirit and everything, it doesn't go away. It's always there, but it also is not intrusive. Those spirit beings are not intrusive. They wait for us to call to them. And then that's such an important piece.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's encouraging when we see, you know, people aware of that and the things that are done in our society to bring that awareness back and the sacredness of things. Let's shift to the void. We can't avoid the void, can we? Even though you have a chapter saying avoiding the void, but you don't really mean that. You're saying we better not avoid the void. Why is the void so important?
Well, it doesn't work to avoid anything, really, Paul. We can certainly set boundaries with things or decide not to do something, but avoidance really says that we're ignoring something and trying to pretend that it's not there. So to avoid the void means that we have to constantly go into denial. We have to constantly deny ourselves or what messages we're receiving. And, you know, we can get a message for a long time, I need to slow down, or I need to, it's what I was referring to early, not listening to ourselves, to those hits. And, you know, our bodies and the elements will speak to us. Synchronicity will speak to us. And sometimes it has to kind of smack us in the forehead before we will, you know, pay attention to it, because it's determined to get our attention, because we're really taking maybe sometimes an unnecessary detour. Sometimes it's fun to take a detour. Nita has a little sign in her garage here, which is quite funny. I don't know where she found it, but on the side of the road or something, it says end of detour. And from a road sign, and I was looking at it yesterday, and I thought, wouldn't that be wonderful if we could have that in our consciousness, sometimes to quit taking the detours and to when we saw something coming and change coming, that we were to consciously walk towards it. And this to me is the difference of not being awake, if you will, and working to be awake and to walk and to awaken shamanic consciousness, is that when we see change, instead of avoiding it, that we step onto those cycles of change and we see where we are on the wheel. Because sometimes water is calling us. Sometimes earth is calling us. Sometimes fire is calling us. Sometimes air is calling us. And that whatever it is that's calling, that if we can open ourselves and say, speak to me and listen, or in our case, we frequently teach people shamanic breathwork journeying, whatever it might be, where people can get in touch with that soul whisper, then we walk inspirited with courage, which means to take heart towards those changes and towards what's in the void. And what's in the void is really whatever it is that we need. And I do have to say this, being Nita and I both being licensed in the addictions field throughout the years, if the only way to truly avoid the void is to go into an addiction. We can only avoid it so long without going into an addiction. And then right. That can be anything from too much TV to too much alcohol to whatever it might be.
Right, exactly. And I love the idea that, you know, the darkness, the void, the emptiness, as it's called in Buddhist teaching, right? It's actually, like you said, full of everything we need. It's that spaciousness. And if we crowd ourselves with all the other things we think we need, we never create enough space to really enjoy what's truly available. I think this is one of the sadnesses of more traditional Christianity, you know, is that we've demonized half of our psyches here and called it the devil, you know. Whereas in Hinduism, for instance, you know, we have Kali, the all-devouring mother, you know, which represents the energies and the darkness of part of this world. But it's integrated. She's one of the goddesses. She hasn't been demonized. And I think it's very healthy, because when we can understand our own extinction and our annihilation and our death, then we can be more fully alive, right? It's part and parcel of this balance we're talking about.
It absolutely is. I'm really glad you brought up the darkness. It is true, unfortunately, in Western culture that we've demonized our dark, rich soil. And one of the things that Starwolf and I both teach a lot about are those goddesses, Kali, Durga, the ones that are at the seat of our consciousness that we've shut out. I mean, you talk about soul loss. We have lost our connection to that ability to grow. And what does Kali do? She comes in and slays the demons of unconsciousness. And yet, you're right. And unfortunately, in Western culture, often we've demonized that. And what happens when you separate out that so-called darkness from the light, you get addicted and polarized by the light. And not to be too dramatic, but, you know, that's pretty much what Hitler did. He was all about the light and did not embrace his own nature. And that's a dramatic example, but you've said it well, Paul. You will see how people who are all about goodness, we call that spiritual bypass in a way. You know, if they just eat the right vegetarian food and pray 5 times a day, 10 times a day, and I do good things, I'm a good person.
Right.
And everything will be all right. And, you know, those are the people that are just finding themselves being caught in scandal sacks.
Right. There we go.
You've got to integrate the darkness.
Very good point. Very good point. By the way, on a more frivolous note, I don't have End of Detour in my garage, but I do have something that somebody brought back from after Katrina from New Orleans. It's, of course, my name's Roach, so it's St. Roach Street. So so I got it over my entrance to my house. So you go into the garage, it's St. Roach Street. But I haven't really been sainted yet, but maybe one day. All right, emotional
something
cancer.
To look forward to.
Tell me what that is.
Sainthood?
Did you say?
No, emotional cancer, not sainthood.
Okay.
You have a chapter.
I was going to say, I can't speak about the saint part.
I know, I was going to say, I don't. That's not me. I'll say a couple things about emotional cancer. I want you to Starwolf, on a very simple level. I think we came up with that term in relationship to the prevalence of depression and anxiety in our culture.
Yes.
And it, those are killers, ultimately, if left alone. And one thing, you know, that I've gotten really passionate about is to encourage people to not go around say, I'm depressed when they mean I'm sad. I'm anxious when they mean I'm scared. That we've got diagnostic terms. terms in the vernacular that takes people a step away from their actual feeling body.
I like that.
And when you divorce yourself from it, that's when the cancerous part starts. So, Star, would you say something about that too?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, you know, that cancer is, I think we have to admit that it's epidemic on our planet. And, you know, we can look at it as a physical thing, which it definitely is, but it starts a long time someplace else first. And I truly believe, because for centuries really now, there's been this push to, I guess you could say, civilize people, and to modernize people, and I love my modern conveniences. But to civilize us or modernize us, or as Isadora Duncan said, to tame us, that it's removed us from our natural wisdom. And because of that, we can pollute the waters, we can pollute the earth, we can pollute the air, we can pollute all the elements. Look at the fires that are happening, that are springing up all over the place, and the heat indexes that are going up. We can do all these things, and some of it may be the cycles of change from the spiritual world, but a lot of it, because human beings are meant to be, I believe, to be the embodiment of spirit, that we are kind of like baby gods, if you will, gods and goddesses, trying to grow up, hopefully, that we have forgotten our own power. We have forgotten that we have this connection to this spiritual world. And because of this, we forget the impact of our behaviors. We don't even think that our impact of what we do impacts our outer world and vice versa. So there's this unconscious pollution of everything in the outer world, which is mirroring this emptiness inside. And then when we take in, of course, the food from this earth that's created, from the elemental world, we take in the waters from around us, when we breathe the air, when we use certain, products in our houses, all these things, you can only have so much of a toxic overload for a long time from the outer world and the inner world before cancer shows up physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually. It cannot be separated. We try to separate things out, I guess, perhaps, in order to understand them, but it really is a gestalt. It does have to be seen in the whole, that we can't separate ourselves from nature. So
yes,
when we pollute outside, it's really mirroring the pollution inside and vice versa.
Yes, I agree completely. And, of course, we have movements that are just starting up now, like eco-psychology or whatever, that are looking at the connection between our health, mental health, and how much time we are connected to nature. Don Miguel Ruiz, of course, talks, and his sons were on my show recently, talks a lot about domestication. And I'm reminded of going to a museum near my hometown, which showed houses over the centuries, a folk museum, in the primitive houses a few hundred years ago, there was only one chair perhaps, and that was the master of the house would sit there, but everybody else sat on the floor on rustic benches or earth banks or something. And then over the years, more and more things were added to the buildings and to the rooms, so that we're, each step cut off. Originally, it was dirt floors, and now, it's linoleum or wood floors or whatever, but something that cocoons us from nature, right? So we're getting further and further away from it, and we would see it as a very big put down if we were, in a rustic setting now. It seems beneath us, but really, it's some people who are in rustic settings seem happier than those who were, surrounded by all their mod cons. By the way, I love what you describe a codependency as. It's narcissistic altruism, aka codependency. I think that's a great great description, because I think a lot of us can get involved in narcissistic altruism. It's a little bit like you said earlier around spiritual bypassing. We want to be nice, but it's really on our terms sometimes, isn't it? It's a form of selfishness, even though it's masquerading as altruism.
Yes, I mean, I think it's a good descriptive term, because you say the word codependent to somebody, first off, most people don't know what it means. And those that even are involved think it has something to do with you're taking care of somebody else, and people really focus on, oh, I've got to stop being so codependent, and almost wear it as a badge of honor occasionally. But when you really look at the roots of it, that you are giving yourself away in a subversive way, in a kind of unconscious or maybe unconscious way, but secretly, it's the way you take care of yourself. Secretly, it's all about your own resentments, and you're not having stepped fully into your own power. And, you know, one of our teachers and friends, Jacqueline Small, said, codependency is an honest mistake. It's an honest mistake. It comes from love.
Yeah.
And it gets morphed into this place of getting your needs met without just stating them. So
right.
It's narcissism, a little disguised, yeah.
We're sick little people, aren't we, in so many ways?
That's the nature. We're human. We're human.
I think we're human, right. Who was it? James, what was his first name? You know, Varieties of Religious Experience talked about the sick soul and the healthy soul. And I've always liked that. You know, the healthy soul is more mature, is more centered and balanced and able to deal with the contradictory nature of life, right? But I think so often we have a hard time dealing with contradictories, so we go back to safety in all its various forms. And you know, maybe it is an honest mistake, but it leads us up the wrong path so often, and it can lead us to sickness, like you're talking about, and the woundedness and the sick soul or whatever, so soul loss, etc. We've got about 5 minutes left, so what haven't we covered that you really want to get across to us today?
That's a big question in a short period of time.
Yeah. What haven't we covered from the book?
We really haven't spoken about shamanic breath work much, and if I could quickly speak into that. The shamanic breath work practice is a practice we developed 21 years ago, and came out an outgrowth of many other breathwork practices, but not only breathwork practices, but mine and Nita's experiences in the world of, as she said, medicine and addiction field and counseling. And we have this long history of being seekers, if you will, not only in the outer world, but also from our, quote, psychedelic research in the 60s as well, psychedelic field work. So there's a way in which we have, both of us, before we knew one another and then all the years we've known together, have been working simultaneously on looking to heal and transform ourselves and to also bring what we've learned and share it back with the world. And so one of the main approaches that we use today is the shamanic breathwork journey process. And so that's something that people can find out if they would like to know more about it on our shamanicbreathwork.org events page. But we both do a lot of workshops. We do a lot of teachings. We do a lot of writing. It's really not just our work. I know I'm speaking for both Nita and I. It's part of our dharma. It's part, like it is for you, Paul. I know that. I mean, you know, we work, we make a living. This is what you do. And at the same time, there's about, 10,000 different kinds of careers in the world. And this is a soul calling. And so taking people through these shamanic breathwork journeys is one of the, for us, is our premier tool or method or ceremony or whatever you want to call it, to help people awaken their souls, whispering, and to begin to get to remove the blocks, to get in touch with the shadow, not to get rid of the shadow, to embrace the shadow as well as the light, and to embody spirit and begin that journey truly as a daily practice to awaken shamanic consciousness in everyday living. So really this method that we use, because we can all do a lot of talking. I know for myself, I love to talk, and I love to be in these wonderful, lively conversations. But at the end of the day, it's about the experiential component for me. When I can feel it in my body and my emotional field as well as my mind and my social field, there is a felt sense of change that then shows up in my outer life. So I would, you know, we've both been doing shamanic breathwork all these years, and we've literally done it with thousands and thousands of people, with groups of, I was just with Don Miguel Ruiz in the Gathering of the Shamans and his sons out in Sedona in May, and I breathed 120 people there in 4 hours. We did a big shamanic breathwork journey.
Very
and
cool.
It was highly transformational for everyone there and very embodied.
Yeah, and I love that, what you're saying about embodied, because, you know, we have a lot of talking heads in our society, don't we, that are telling us all these things, whether that be political or spiritual. And I think, again, people are yearning for the visceral, you know, to how do we embody it in our lives? How do we make it practical? And every week, you know, when I do my sermons, I'm always adding pieces that say, okay, you can take these ideas now and here's how to practice them. You know, it has to be a way of living. I think that's what I love about Unity, is it's a way of life. It's not just something nice to hear on Sunday and then we go back to our real world, quote. You know, this is meant to be lived, isn't it? And I think the greatest sadness is when we don't do that, you know, when we just make a philosophy out of it. And I'm glad that you provide, you know, numerous techniques in your book and, of course, in your own practice to do that. If people want to get hold of you, what's the best way?
Our website. Go ahead. Yeah, it's a website, www.shamanicbreathwork.org, and we both have those email addresses, too, starwolf@shamanicbreathwork.org or nita@shamanicbreathwork.org.
Right, yeah. And, folks, this is a fascinating book.
Yeah.
No, go ahead. If there's other stuff, tell me.
I was just going to say, also, if people don't want to look up the website or, you know, email us, they can go to either of our Facebook pages, but I have a Facebook page called Star Wolf, and also we have a Soul Whispering Facebook page. We have a lot of followers on there, and all of our events and radio shows and a plethora of things that are happening throughout the year are being posted on there and updated daily and weekly by our people. So that's really
awesome,
quick and good way to just
fun.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah, and like I said, the book has got lots of fascinating things in it, and some of it covers ground some of us may be already familiar with, but that it's presented in a fresh and new way with lots of testimonies, too. That's one thing we didn't talk about. There's various people telling their aspects of their story, right, throughout the book, so you've embodied it in that sense, too, how it's been working for folks.
Yes. That feels very important. I think the book also, one thing I'd say about it is it's speaking to the ordinary person that you really can transform and have direct experiences with soul and spirit. It's not for the few chosen, and that I think that the stories really illustrate that.
Yes.
And one last thing I wanted to say was that Teilhard de Chardin said that we're spiritual beings having a human experience. And I just want to encourage everybody to have the human experience. And as we've been saying before, that means light and dark and the mess and the joy all mixed up. Be human and spiritual at the same time.
And the key to that is, you know, you can have a more delightful and joyous human experience when you remember that you're not tied down to that, you know, that you are a spiritual being. And so the light shines through all the messiness, if you like. Because if it's just one big mess, it's kind of disheartening. But when the light shines in through the mess, it becomes a joy. The mess begins to dance, doesn't it? And it becomes a wonderful thing. You know, you become juicy and joyous. So, yeah, there's the fine line again of walking between the two worlds. All right, in five words or less, each of you, give us an affirmation we can take with us this week.
Love yourself.
Love yourself.
William James.
All right, that's a good one.
I just wanted to quote William James since you brought that up.
And that William is, James, that's right, yeah.
Yes, act as if what you do makes a difference, because it does.
Yeah. There we go. Very good. Excellent advice and wonderful book. Let me tell you about next week's show, and then we'll say goodbye to Star Wolf and Nita. And next week, Suzanne Scurlock-Duran joins me to talk about her book. It's called Reclaiming Your Body, which is very much in line with what we talked about today, isn't it, in embodiment here. So that's going to be an interesting tie-in. Right now I want to thank both these lovely people for being with me on the show. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you so much, Paul. I've enjoyed it immensely. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Have a great trip to Scotland.
All right. Thanks very much. Yeah, we're looking forward to it now. All right. And to everybody listening, thanks so much for following World Spirituality, and have a great week. See you next week. Take care now.
Thank you for tuning in to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach. Join us every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Central to further examine the spiritual teachings and religious traditions of our world and to discover the universal truth principles present in all. World Spirituality, only on UnityOnlineRadio.org, the voice of an awakening world. This program is brought to you in part by Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas, celebrating the Christ Spirit in all people. Online at www.unityfortworth.org.
It is the birthright of each and every one of us to live an awakened life. Most religions and spiritual traditions teach us that we need to adopt a certain belief system or follow some prescribed steps to attain a state of enlightenment. A long-held belief about awakening is that only a small number of people destined to become gurus or spiritual teachers can attain it. It is certainly true that until recent times, only a small number of people on the planet had attained this state of full self-realization. These saints, mystics, and spiritual masters were seen as special. They certainly were, at the time. However, times are changing. This message was brought to you by T.J. Woodward, host of Awakened Living Radio. Learn more from T.J. on his weekly podcasts. Episodes are available on UnityOnlineRadio.org, iTunes, and Google Play Music.
Life calls upon us to be open to new ideas, new creative ways of thinking, and new ways of doing things. All of the positive changes in our world have been the result of open-minded people looking at some aspect of their world in a whole new way. You can have a more exciting life filled with wonder and glory when you keep an open mind about the new and unusual things that come your way, and when you take a new look at what you thought were life's ordinary experiences. Just like the turtle who won't get anywhere in life without sticking its neck out a little, we get a lot further in life by sticking our mental neck out a little every day. You can be open to the changes in your world by starting with your own thoughts. This message has been brought to you by the Association of Unity Churches International. To find a Unity Church near you, visit www.unity.org. Ever notice that there might be something not quite right, but you just can't put your finger on it? We may describe it as an inner stirring, a restlessness, a yearning to find our way home to our heart and higher purpose. Some of us may feel like we are living on borrowed time, that despite our accomplishments, what was once so important to us now just feels empty and meaningless. If you find your heart longing, wanting, looking for a path home to authenticity and purpose, join us for transformation, inspiration, hope, and possibility. Move toward your higher calling. Listen to The Call of Spirit with Evelyn Foreman and tune in to Possibility every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Central Time here on Unity Online Radio.
Sometimes you feel so alone and overwhelmed, you don't know where to turn. These days, it seems like there is no end to our problems. We invite you to connect with Silent Unity, the 24-hour prayer ministry where someone is waiting to pray with you right now. Since 1890, Silent Unity has always been there. No judgment or dogma, just someone affirming the best for you. Call 816-969-2000 today. You can also connect online at unityprayervigil.org.